You're listening to Around Comics, episode 205.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics was recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here, and not our normal opening. We had some technical difficulties and lost a few minutes of the introductions on this episode, but let you know who was here. Tom Caters was out of town for this recording, but we had our own Brian Salazar back on the roundtable, in addition to the creator of Loaded Bible and Hack Slash, among many other titles. Mr. Tim Seeley joins us, and Hank sat in with us as well. About the only thing that we missed in the opening here that was destroyed because of our technical difficulties was our announcement about the Windy City Comic Con. It's only 2 weeks left. It's on October 25th, so it is sneaking up on us pretty quickly. Any of the information that you want to find out about the Windy City Comic Con, just go to windycitycomiccon.com, and it has all of the info there. You can pre-register, and if you do so, you will guarantee getting one of the fabulous gift packs that we have for the first 500 attendees and pre-registered folks online are guaranteed for those. I just found out that Ron from iFanboy is coming into town for the Windy City show, so we have about 40 guest creators, 16 exhibitors, and Ron from iFanboy, so you can't beat that. So check out the Windy City Comic Con. We're going to jump right into the conversation here with Sal, myself, Hank, and Tim. So sorry about the technical difficulties, but you really didn't miss that much, so hope you enjoy the show. Thanks, folks.
Didn't Buffy come out when Hank was 4?
Yeah,
he was pretty young, so I guess he got
it. It's like me watching The Prisoner.
Exactly.
but I will Hank, you probably need to watch
it.
But you
love The Prisoner.
I do love The Prisoner. It's British. You probably need to watch Buffy in the next couple years because it is rapidly dating.
Is it?
Yeah,
really?
It is. It's my wife and I started watching the series from the beginning, and that first season, it does
well,
not...
Well, the first season. Well, it's like too much like Third Eye Blind references.
No, there's good stuff in it, though.
It's still great.
It's more the character
There are so many kinda, pop culture references in
wow,
Buffy, though.
That show was
oh, Brandon brought donuts.
Wow.
Oh. Nice. I got a text from
donuts
Brandon in the middle of math class. Says, "What donuts do you like?"
Oh,
any?
Sprinkles,
the free kind.
Chocolate
kind.
Thank you, sir. Chocolate donuts and beer. Speaking of, grab a beer if you like, Brandon. Before I forget, we need to mention that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Yeah.
You know, our wonderful sponsors. Zach Krause from one of the employees.
My boy Zach.
He's going to be at the Windy City Con.
He is! Yeah, I didn't know Zach was coming in.
Yeah,
oh,
Zach,
cool.
Zach's coming in. InStockTrades.com offers you a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our new book club selection, Tom Beland's True Story, Swear to God, Archive Volume 1, for a fantastic...
You guys are doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Well, you've listened to the show.
I haven't listened in a while. I'm a little behind.
That's okay. It's okay.
He
hears enough of me during the day.
I've been listening to Russell Brand's BBC and CNN podcast. Ooh. And MSNBC.
We're all about politics.
It's all I have done for 3 weeks is watch political shows. That's
three weeks ago, I'm talking about the debates, and he's like, "Chris, I really just don't give a shit." Now every day, every day we talk about politics.
I'm just
obsessed
now.
That's the thing, man. This election especially is You can just throw your life away.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's awesome. I love it. Yeah. But anyway, true story, swear to God, the archive, the first archive, which is one of the great image phone book style archives, so it's got everything, is discounted 47%. It's got the first 17 issues of the six-time Eisner-nominated series. So check that
the
out.
Susan Lucci of...
It is the Susan Lucci. That's the second time this week we've talked about Susan Lucci.
Yeah, it is. That's kind of weird.
This is getting scary.
Odd that we would mention Susan Lucci that much. But I am a big Dancing with the Stars fan, so what
I think
I
we'll
say?
Throw her out at least one more time in the podcast.
Always happens. Always happens. But, yeah, we're running a little behind on the book club thing because of all the convention stuff. But I would expect a couple weeks after that we'll be ready to talk about
True story, swear to God.
Yep. It is a
heart, where did that come from?
It is a heartwarming love story. So I'm about halfway through it. And it's just great slice of life stuff. So I've been enjoying it. So it's a different kind of comic. It is no capes or laser beams in this
fuck.
One. So
forget it.
Disneyland trip to Disneyland though.
Ooh. They did? They went to Disneyland.
That's where they met.
I love Disneyland.
They met Disneyland.
I went there on my honeymoon.
It's the Magic Kingdom.
I think I'm going next year.
I love Disneyland.
Fantastic.
World, not Disney.
We'll get back to Hack Slash here in a little bit. Which speaking of in stock trades and Hack Slash, what is up with not being able to buy the omnibus? Is that
sold out?
Completely.
I got mine. We have to do a reprint. We solicited it for January, I believe.
So you are reprinting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I was doing the second volume also.
Oh, awesome.
So the second volume is solicited for February, I think. But yeah, we are reprinting it. That's one of the things with the weird thing about doing indie comics is you hope you're going to sell a lot, but sometimes you print a shitload and then you just have a big full warehouse, like a stock. You have a roost for pigeons with your comic. But in this case,
this one we
really probably didn't sell. It was been printed nearly enough, so we are reprinting it. They will be back out. I wish we had printed more, but hey, that's how it goes.
That's
part indie of comics, baby. So. But yeah, should be reprinted soon. I think you can order in your next issue previews, I believe.
And it's a great omnibus.
It's a big, full color.
Yeah. So, but you got to have the color for Hack Slash. You know,
the blood.
You don't want gray blood.
Don't want gray blood.
No gray blood. Yeah. So
Cassie's outfits
worked for some of the old zombie movies, but
Cassie.
God damn you!
I'm sorry.
You listen to the devil.
Scotty's
in
me. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did proclaim my love for her not
for
that
Cassie.
Long ago. No, for Casey.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's just of course. Well, that woman is some stuff. Right?
You know, Hack Slash definitely has developed a reputation as being a very popular book with the Suicide Girls. Oh. And from what I hear, we may have some Suicide Girls showing up at the Windy City show.
You actually have one that I'm good friends with.
Nice.
A Miss Salome Slaughter, or Salome Suicide, as you may call it.
You know, okay, this is a little insider info on the whole convention thing. As I'm figuring out where everyone is going to sit at their artist alley tables,
uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, well, Tim, going to move Tim to an end cap, you know, one of our special guest tables.
Congrats.
And I'm like, okay, well, I could put Tim, I had you over kind of by the door, but I was like, you know what, there's going to be all the Suicide Girls by his table, and I don't want to...
Put them by me.
Well, I didn't want to create a log jam.
You didn't
of people.
Put them by me?
Yes, I put them right by you. You're more towards the middle of the convention floor, so I'm accommodating for the crowds.
Oh, that's very nice. Yeah, I don't think there would be, but there's always a fair amount around Suicide Girls, which is cool. And, you know, they are in person even more stunning than they are on websites. And they're all very nice girls, actually, which is cool because all the Suicide Girls that are in Chicago are actually nerds like us. So at least all the ones that I've met... very cool girls. Actually,
awesome.
Last weekend I went, or 2 weekends ago, went to a horror film festival, and I sat down, and Salome Slaughter sat next to me. So we watched a great horror movie together called Dracula versus Bonnie and Clyde.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean they're cool girls. They're not just faking it. They're living it, baby. So
I'll tell you, already looking forward to next year. There's a full fledged theater in the community center where the convention is,
uh-huh.
And I think totally would love to do some film premieres.
Films?
Yeah,
amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
we want to do some kind of film premieres or something. Independent
I can
film
put
stuff.
Something together.
Could you?
You're going to make a movie? Or
you're going to make a film? You're in charge of making the Windy City Comic Con documentary.
All right.
You know. All right. But yes, we'll probably be in touch with Tim and some of your film buddies. But yeah, it's set up. It's It's all there to do a film premiere.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it'll be
awesome. Chicago needs to be geek capital of the world.
It is
kind of in its way, yeah.
Let's just expand
that.
Yeah. Screw San Diego. Sorry, Pat. All right, well, I tell you what, let's talk about some comics here.
Comics?
Yeah, comics. Yeah. It's a comic book show. No. It's what we do. There's been, huh?
I forgot.
You forgot.
You were ready to talk about Obama.
Yeah.
We were talking politics.
We're talking about the financial bailout plan.
I'd have pissed people off in that
Sal
one.
Had actually two awesome comic book recommendations
this
week, and I want to talk about both of them, so take it away, Mr. Salazar.
One of the cool books that I read this week was something by Joe Kelly called Four Eyes. It was a new miniseries from Image. Joe Kelly wrote it, and Max
Fiumara
was the artist on it, and I had no idea what it was going into it. I just picked it up and read it, and basically, it's a story about a young immigrant son in 1930s New York.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Depression is going on. His father and his family have been having troubled times, as most Americans at that time did. But of late, it seems like they've been doing better. And the book opens with them going to the beach, and the whole thing is told by from the little boy's perspective. He just mentions how it was surprising that they dad decided to take a day off
day.
Work. Very special day. We're going to the beach. We're going to hang out, and nobody really does that anymore because everybody's worried about the only time they do something like that is because they don't have a job. But things have been looking up, and he it's one of the greatest days in his young life. And he just worships his father, and his father's his hero. So they go to the beach and they're hanging out, and at one point the father decides to go. He says he's going to go have a cigarette, and he walks off, and the son's kind of concerned. After about an hour, his father hasn't come back, and he goes to look for him, and he finds he climbs up this rock and sees this very weird setting of this cave with like a rope tied outside of it leading into the cave. And he like grabs the rope and he pulls it, and then all of a sudden his father comes charging out of the cave with a bag on his back, and behind him is this giant dragon. So it's like completely out of the blue. I mean, you didn't expect it all going, up to this point. It just looked like a period piece, kind of book. So this dragon jumps out and ends up actually killing his father, and the father throws the I guess I should say there's spoilers in this, but
yeah.
Sorry. So the father ends up throwing the bag to the son and tells him to protect it and everything, and then we cut to the father's wake, and the son's starting to realize that maybe his father was doing
it's connected.
There's a lot of mobsters now at the wake, and one in particular comes to talk to the son, and you find out that his father was working for this man. And the bag, whatever's in this bag, is what he was out to get. That's what his job was, to get whatever is in this bag. And the guy actually shows him what it is, and it's a baby dragon. And now the kid's just like, blown away. But the thing is, you start to realize after that point that dragons are common in this story. That it's not anything strange.
They exist in the world.
Yeah, they exist
in this
world.
So the kid's not shocked by
that. The kid's not shocked by that, but his father's killed, and he didn't know, he didn't know what his father was doing for a job, and now he's sort of questioning, his father's morality a little bit and what's going on, so he wants to find out more. So he actually finds out about this mobster guy and goes to where he, finds out that he hangs out or whatever, and it ends up the story basically ends with him finding out that this mobster guy runs these underground dragon fights, sort of like dog fights, but they're dragons.
Yeah.
And that's where the story ends, and I don't know where it's going to go from there, but
you get an idea from the cover, which is
get an idea. The kid's great cover. Mm-hmm. The art on it is just fantastic.
Well, did you kind of figure out why it's called Four Eyes?
No.
The dragons have four eyes.
The dragon? Do they have?
If you
look on the cover, the dragon had
has four eyes. So I have a feeling that at some point the kid is going to get his own dragon.
But it's it turns out his father's like a dragon hunter, and he hunts for these underground very illegal dragon fights. And in the back of the book, there's like this news article about these dragon fights that were busted in this great newspaper page that they did. And just sort of building on the whole world.
It's a beautiful
book.
Oh,
it's beautiful. The art is fantastic in it. But I've just really become a huge fan of Joe Kelly of late. Just his other book that's out right now.
I Kill Giants.
I Kill Giants, which is just fantastic imagination and creativity. I mean, just stuff that
He's doing some amazingly inventive but accessible books.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great Giants is fantastic. Tom's talked about that book enough, but
yeah, great imagination, but stuff that you jump right into and just fall in love with these guys. The boy in this book is you hurt for him so much.
Sure.
He loved his father, and now the one line that really struck me is right after his father basically gets incinerated, that he goes, "It was a very special day. It was the day I became the man of the family."
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, this kid's like 10.
And he goes he goes to work, and I mean, you know, trying to take care of his mother and everything.
Working 10-hour days for a quarter, and
but know, it's, basically it's just, a depression. It's just such a very creative, you know, idea and concept, and you know, crafted extremely well too. Where it's just, I mean, it's just a sort of like fantasy tale, but set in the 1930s Depression era New York, and just really good stuff. I'm
looking forward to both those trades so much. I Kill Giants are two
fantastic
trades that I'm really waiting for.
You're waiting for a trader, aren't you?
I don't read comics.
He waits for the Omnibuy
only. If it's not an absolute or an omnibus, forget it. Hank doesn't buy them.
I mean, you know, Joe Kelly, who obviously has the commercial sensibilities. I mean, who once wrote X-Men and all that sort of stuff, and Deadpool and stuff, and JLA, for God's sakes. But his commercial sensibilities are not at all what defines the guy, because everything he's done sort of outside has been really genre bending, innovative stuff. So.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, like you say, I mean, he has those sensibilities of how to craft a story where it's not like.
Yeah.
A lot of times people will, you know, they'll have a good concept for something, but the concept outweighs the story, you know, and the story just never lives up to it.
Yeah.
But he seems to be able to blend.
Or on the other side, you get people that are very formulaic and very good at doing one thing, and when they try and stretch out of that, it's just, you know, maybe that one genre or that one kind of niche is where they seem to excel. But
he's done two books that are just like completely outside of anything you've really seen much of, you know, and both, you know, kids, you know, which is interesting. I mean, both books are very
channeling his inner child.
Well, no, I mean, I just think it's interesting that both books easily could, you know, appeal to younger readers.
Speaking of which, Joe Kelly actually got me into comics when I was like 8 years old.
He came to your house.
Third, fourth, close.
Get
in the van. You're reading comics.
When I was in like third or fourth grade, I was in a really small class, like eight kids, like six boys, and my teacher was best friends with Joe Kelly, and she was always like, "Do you guys read comics? And Joe used to always like mail her comics to give to us, like Superboy issues. I remember Superboy.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, "Hey, it's pretty cool." And then I always tried to get into it, and I couldn't understand any of it, so I didn't read it until 3 years ago. So.
Why couldn't you understand Superboy? It was too
old. Not Superboy. Oh, this is cool. I'm going to go read a Superman. And then I go to the comic shop and pick
he's
up a
dead.
Superman.
And Superman was dead.
There was two of them.
There was.
I'm so confused.
It was
too
confusing.
Much for my young mind.
Well, you mentioned Deadpool a minute ago, which Joe Kelly wrote, but you and Wood has been talking about.
The new Deadpool?
The new Deadpool.
It's really funny. It's just. It's the best Secret Invasion tie-in, I think, out there.
I borrowed the three issues from you, and they were awesome.
They're just funny. I mean, I haven't really read the other Deadpool stuff that's come out. I didn't read the Joe Kelly Deadpool other than
Gale's,
here or there.
Yeah,
Gale
stuff.
I hadn't really, but I did start reading Cable Deadpool at one point, and I really liked that, so I decided to pick up the new Deadpool, and it's hilarious. I mean, he's just a funny character, and the way I can't even tell you who's writing it. I don't even know.
It's Daniel Way.
Paco Medina, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. Paco Medina on art.
And the way he's, you know, writing the character, you know, because Deadpool's insane.
You have two
inner monologues, and then he'll break the fourth wall and talk directly to you.
Yeah.
One of the best moments, because there's a lot of funny moments, but at one point he's... Well, let me set up the story a little bit. The story starts out with the Skrull invasion that's happening in all the Marvel books. And in this one part of it, they invade this baseball game, this huge stadium full of people and teams playing. And for some reason, Deadpool is dressed up as the team mascot. And he ends up kicking the crap out of all the Skrulls. And that's like the first issue. And at the end of it, after he's beat all their asses and made a bunch of smart-ass remarks, he surrenders to them and says he wants to join the Skrull army. So that's the first issue. I mean, it's just like, what the fuck? You know, so then after that, you find out that he's like, you know, I'm a mercenary. I'm good at killing people. You want to kill everybody? Hey, hire me.
It's what I do.
It's what I do. So instead of hiring them or wanting him to be part of the Skrull army, they just want his they find out, you know, he can regenerate because that's like his mutant power is he's got this healing factor and you can't kill him. So they decide to just extract that from his DNA and create a bunch of super Skrulls with that ability. Huh.
So unkillable Skrulls.
Yeah, unkillable. Yeah. So in the second issue, you see this army of Deadpool Skrulls, which is funny in and of itself. But
they're all Deadpools with pointy Skrull ears.
He does eventually convince them to have him train the Skrull warriors because they have his abilities, but they don't have, you know, any of his knowledge or fighting skill or whatever. So he starts training them, and in typical Deadpool fashion, it's more insanity than any actual training. But at one point, he's like, okay, hand-to-hand combat's the most important thing, even if you don't have hands. So he has them all cut off their hands. And he's like, hey, you know, the important thing is to get it back and reattach before the flies start. And that's why it's a really good reason to have lots and lots of pouches. And then he turns to the reader, and he goes, right, Rob?
And one of the clone Skrull Deadpools goes, who's Rob? Rob?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just all sorts of... I mean, there's joke after joke, and it's completely not serious at all. But it's really just fun and funny, and Deadpool is just a hilarious character written well. But at the same time, quite honestly, there is a story to it, too, because then you find out later on what he's really doing.
It's not really this weird coincidence.
Yeah, there's more of a plan there, and that story starts to develop. But, I mean, just the great scenes between him and the Super Skrull, where he's just like, because he kicked the Super Skrull's ass in the first fight, and then throughout the whole rest of the other two issues, he's
merciless.
Just fucking with him.
Just merciless.
You know, just giving him shit the whole time, and it's just hilarious. But there is a really good story in it, too, and I just have had a lot of fun with the first three issues of it and want to see where it goes. But
I love seeing Marvel doing some really fun books.
Yeah,
like
I mean, that's just it. It is just purely fun. You know, you can't take it too serious because there's not anything...
It's Deadpool.
I mean, yeah, he's a, you know...
I actually did the Deadpool thing for that Weapon X first class thing, and the writer did a really crazy-ass story, and I was like, wow, that was fun to draw, and I didn't realize that's kind of par for the course.
Yeah, with him, you can kind of
do
anything. Do
whatever.
And Paco Medina's art's great.
Yeah, yeah, it fits it really well. And
a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just good stuff. So that's there. You go for all those people complaining we don't talk enough mainstream books. Not only did I pick a mainstream book, but a Secret Invasion tie-in. How
you know
that?
The tie-ins much more
they've been
entertaining.
Really good, and I've been missing all of them.
Captain Britain, MI13 is a ton of fun.
Black Panther.
Well, unlike the actual Secret Invasion book, these other ones have linear stories that are going somewhere instead of backwards.
Well,
no offense to
it's just the big scope of it. But you look at
any Secret Invasion book you open, it all starts with 2 months ago or 6 years ago or every friggin' issue. It's like, what's happening now? Is there anything going forward? Is this
and that's the
anywhere?
Thing about the Deadpool? It's three issues, but it actually has a story.
It's
a three issue story.
There's another. It's going somewhere. I mean, you know, and it's tied in with the whole, you know.
Yeah.
Skrull Invasion.
So fun stuff. Yeah. Mr. Seeley, do you have anything for us
this week?
Secret
Six.
Don't ask me this week.
Oh, Secret Six, issue 2.
Yes.
I did not grow up as a DC guy. I was always a Marvel kid and stuff, but I really, and I don't really actually read any current DC books, but I picked up the first issue, Secret Six, and then I just got this one now. And it's just really clever and really well drawn. And you get, you know, I mean, obviously, like, a Batman guest role is always cool, but in this issue, Batman has actually a very interesting point, because he's sort of the foil to Catman, who's strangely the kind of opposite of Batman. You know, Batman's very disciplined and sort of very well-planned and everything. Mm. Catman is sort of the opposite. He's just really, like...
Ruled by his emotions.
Yeah, and he just kind of goes with it, but the way that Gail sets this up is really, really smart. And, you know, Nicola Scott, who I always liked the art of, with Doug Hazelwood on inks, really, really is great. It harkens back to some older stuff that very kind of sort of pseudo Jerry Ordway.
They are killing on this book.
Yeah, you know, and it's what I used to read superhero comics for, which was, you know, just a very, like, you know, I mean, there's 7-8 panels on a page, and it's really well illustrated, and it's a lot of characters, and there's not, like, you know, tons of, it's not stretched out. It's, you know, basically the Secret Six have to get from Alcatraz to Gotham City with this person that they broke out of prison. And obviously there's going to be, there's everyone in the world is after them, you know, good guys and bad guys, because they're bad guys, but they're sort of...
They're mercs.
Yeah, and they're sort of weak. They're like sort of lower end, you know,
right.
These D-level bad guys. Yeah. But originally interesting characters, interesting relationships, well drawn, well written. Doesn't take a lot of knowledge of DC Universe, which I don't usually have.
Well, there's not that much history with these characters. Sure. I mean, that's
no tie-in to Finite Crisis or whatever is going on there. Not like a lot of stuff going on. Just like a really cool story, really good art.
Did you read the original miniseries?
Yeah, no other relation to this do I have. I just picked
it's
it up.
It's really good.
Really?
Gail
did that too?
It's a Villains United.
Villains United.
And,
yeah.
And then the Secret Six miniseries.
Right.
I think I missed it because it was like a... crossover.
It was, program. But it was, you didn't yeah. have to worry about, you didn't
I always avoid, like, stuff. Crossover stuff, so I didn't pick it up, but I'll maybe go back yeah. now.
The Villains United was a lead-in to Infinite Crisis.
Was it? Or
yes.
52? Or
Infinite, it was one of the...
But it really didn't have, I mean, you didn't have to worry about the other stuff.
Sure.
It was really good.
But then if you like this, you'll love the Secret Six miniseries.
Yeah, I'll pick that as an intrade, because I'll pick that up.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Be,
yeah.
We're good. I mean, I'm totally into that. So.
Is Ragdoll just not the best character?
I mean, I like how, you know, one of the things that, I haven't, you know, necessarily read a lot of these books, one of the things, like some of the DC books I've seen lately, where they just, I used to think of DC when I was a kid, when I did read some of this stuff, was like, it was the fun universe, you know? Mm-hmm. And it seems now like, it's, everybody gets raped and whatever,
it's
you know, and like, and everybody
to, yeah.
gets, you know, it's just all like kind of snuff porn or something like that. And I'm sort of like, what is going on here? Because, but this is fun, but sick, you know, it's like, it's still fun though.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, you kind of get this impression that Ragdoll is sort of this, amazing pervert, and like, you know, there's these subtle things which are not, there are things that I could have read as a kid and been like, oh,
right.
I would have just been like, I accept that he's weird. But then as an adult, I'm like, oh, okay, he's that kind of weird.
Oh,
you know?
He can get into that position.
Yeah, which I appreciate, because I think, you know, so much of the stuff in trying to be edgy ends up sort of being, you know, sort of sad. And, you know, like, and this is just a fun book, and it's about the bad guys, but the bad guys are kind of, despite themselves, good guys. And, you know, and Bane is one of the main characters here, and, you know, Bane, I mean... The last time I saw Bane, he was busting Batman's ass or whatever, and now it's sort of like, you know, he's trying, you kind of get the impression he's sort of religious or something, and he's now, you know, the fact that he's dependent on drugs is a problem for him.
They're
it's
not one-dimensional villains.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
they're fleshed out a bit more.
Yeah, and it's well done, and it's fun, and, you know, really, I mean, Nicole
I actually
got
threw the book down. I was like, damn you, Gail Simone, for making me care about Bane. Damn you.
Yeah, totally.
And that's a character easy to hate.
I just want
to
hate Bane.
Like,
I don't even like the Batman animated series.
And not hate him
Bane,
in a way
yeah.
like he's a horrible villain and you well, hate him.
Yeah.
Just, he's a... He was a terrible character, and, you know, it's like...
But in this case, like, you know, they sort of play up this thing where his sort of affection for Scandal is not necessarily what everyone else's affection for Scandal is, because they're all sort of like, oh, I want to get her pants, but she's a lesbian. But his is more like, I think she needs a dad, and everyone else is creeped out by this. Like, it's very interesting character stuff. And, you know, it's the only sort of in-continuity DC book that I've enjoyed in a while, which obviously All-Star Superman that you picked up is the non-in-continuity book, which is probably the best... comic book I've read in a long time, but you know, I mean, for you know, for like an in continuity sort of DC universe book, it's really fun, really cool. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. So,
get no arguments here.
Right on.
Very nice. Well, Hank, are you going to talk about All Star Superman?
I want to talk about Hack Slash.
Oh
no, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about Superman.
Dick,
you're a douche.
See, he's going to stab you with a shiv.
All Star.
That's my dick.
Oh, he sharpens it.
Oh God!
Go ahead, Hank. Young boys, we're perverting them.
Anyways,
yes.
All Star Superman. The last issue 12 came out 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. I think you know this is probably the best Superman I've ever read. It's
wow, Hank. You have no idea how much it pleased me that a 17-year-old kid loves
I'm
Superman
almost 18
for any reason, dude. No shit. But I'm just saying.
Hank's very sophisticated, though.
Well, but for, you know, Superman, I mean, obviously,
wicked smart.
You know, if you've been around for a while, you love Superman. But the fact that you love Superman, that's, they did something fucking right.
I've,
you know what I'm saying?
I've read a lot of Superman. I haven't liked a lot of Superman. I liked For All Seasons. It was good. I really liked the art. I'm really liking the new Krypton, Superman.
The Brainiac stuff.
Yeah,
stuff.
The Brainiac.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeff
Gary
John
Frank
stuff
is one of my new, like, favorite artists. I've always heard the name, but I've never read his stuff.
Go read
Midnight Nation.
Midnight Nation.
Midnight Nation. Fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
He was amazing.
I'll read anything that guy does.
He drew the shit out of that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
and, but this is, the first 11 issues are unbelievable. And I don't know, it might have been, it was probably my fault. I was looking forward to it a little too much, but I knew the ending was coming, you know, for like a year or two. You know, it was always issue 12. You know, when I read 8, 9, 10, it was always like, all right, how is this going to wrap up by 12? You know, I was always thinking about. And now that I read it, I'm not going to say I was underwhelmed, but I was just expecting the best issue ever.
I thought that was the best issue ever, dude. Do you didn't think that fall through for you?
It didn't fall through, but...
Well, let me find one moment that should just make this for you.
Is it while he's looking for that, and I had seen this on a half-assed reputable comic book site, one of the...
iFanboy?
That was brilliant.
No, no. There's nothing reputable about that. No, it was either Newsarama or CBR.
Oh, damn.
But someone had written an article, and I didn't read it, but the basically the headline is All-Star Superman, instant classic. I mean, is this whenever we look back on it, 10 years from now, do you think all, you know, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's All Star Superman is going to be one of those?
It's going to be.
I think it will to a certain segment, but because it's not continuity stuff, I think.
Yeah, but neither was Watchmen, and neither is Dark Knight Returns.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I don't like Superman books generally. I don't normally read Superman. I friggin' love that book.
Yeah.
So don't get me wrong about that. I think for whatever reason, because it's not. You know, like Death of Superman, regardless of what you think about the book, is a huge moment in Superman's history and that character. This Superman doesn't have any relation to that.
Well, but in a weird way, it sort of seems to epitomize and sort of encapsulate all the things that 50 years of Superman comics wish they'd been able to pull off.
12 issues.
In 12 issues.
Yeah, but it kind of took that 50 years of Superman comics to make that possible.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Yeah. Not to discount the work of anyone.
Well, I think in some ways
Fuck.
It did.
No.
It's almost an homage to.
Oh, absolutely.
The 50
yeah,
years
well,
of,
you
know,
see,
without all the terrible shit in between.
Right. Yeah.
Right,
yeah. it's like let's boil it down and take what's left over and edit.
Almost
edit
like
essence,
you know, it's like take what it did to you when you were a kid reading Superman. You know what I mean? Take that. No matter how, you know, when you look back at it now and you read the book that you read when you were 10 or 12 or whatever, and it's But
sure.
He took those parts of how you felt when you read that when you were 12 and made them, you know, accessible
and
today.
Somehow made it timeless in a
weird... Yeah.
This is everything
really
you love
weird.
About Superman.
Mm. Yeah.
And everything, in a weird way, because Superman is sort of the ultimate superhero, it's everything you love about superheroes, period. And you know, that's important reminder, because it's so easy to make all these sort of postmodern things where, you know, we're always like sort of like, hey, we're teaming up. You know what it means? We got to fight. It's like everything is so standard and so our rules are established.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read this book, there's no rules. It's about it's boiling down everything wonderful and
super
and reminding you why you love it.
Yeah,
it's super.
Yeah, it really shows why Superman is, like, you know,
and why there's an entire industry based on him.
Pretty much, man.
Because it's great. I mean, you know, and when it's done right, it's unstoppable. You know,
but
it's
why do you say it was underwhelming for you, Hank? What did you? You think it was more just your expectations?
It was.
I think it was my
expectations.
And
you know what it was? It was Astonishing X-Men is what did it. Because we had 24 awesome issues, and I was always looking forward to the last issue. Always looking forward to the last issue, and the best issue was the last issue, and it blew my mind. And then I was looking for another one of those, and this, and it, I don't know.
Interesting.
All right.
I'm going to disagree with
you. I guess I can see that. Yeah. I don't think there were 24 great assumptions.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I understand where you come from, and I think a problem with this book also is that it's not a monthly book.
Yeah,
that's really
I did have to.
Yeah.
I read 12.
Astonishing wasn't exactly monthly either.
Yeah, that's a good
now,
point.
That was
the best 4.5 years of 24 issues of comics.
Is it completely done, or is someone else going to do more All-Stars?
On the back it says, that's all from All-Stars, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely and Jamie Grant, more Superman coming soon. So I don't know if there's
more.
I don't know
how you follow it up. I don't know where you pick up.
I mean, you'd have to go.
I think you would
go a completely different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to, because otherwise it would just be a, you know,
a reiteration. Yeah, or something,
I don't think you can do what Morrison did to it. I mean,
unless it's like another Morrison thing.
Unless it's,
I mean,
Alan
obviously
Moore.
Because this sort of encapsulates the silver and golden age. You know, maybe it's maybe what you do next is, you know, sort of
Bronze Age stuff.
I mean, maybe you take that Superman spoilers. Maybe take Superman 2, who's mentioned in the last page.
The last
maybe
page.
You take that forward. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like that, you know, because Morrison's always kind of had, even in the mainstream DCU, if you read DC 1 Million and all this stuff, there was this plan he had, which was this future Superman. Superman lives in the sun. He's golden. He's in the future, et cetera. There's the, you know, the Superman with no name, maskless, you know, faceless Superman, all this sort of stuff. He's had this set up, so maybe he has a plan that we don't know, you know. So,
but in terms of it being a classic, the popular opinion among those who have read it is, let's see the absolute.
Yeah.
If that is saying it's a classic.
If they're doing, and don't get me wrong, because I actually am one of the people that really enjoyed Brian Azzarello and Jim Lee's Superman run, that 12-issue run that they did.
Broken City.
No, that's the Batman.
For Tomorrow, which was really
more of an Infinite Crisis build-up that I think, going back and reading that, I still like that. But if they're doing that as an absolute, then they have to do this as an absolute.
I'd imagine they would. I mean, even though it's only 12 issues.
That's a perfect absolute
what about
size. Most of those are 12 issues.
What about Ronin? Ronin?
Watchmen.
Watchmen.
Watchmen's 12.
Yeah, but there's a shitload of backup stuff in there. That's not...
I mean, Ronin was how many?
Well,
issues?
That's a rip off.
Six, maybe.
But it was double size, I think.
Yeah,
it was like $100, right?
No, but
I've already bought the first hardcover. I'm buying the second hardcover, and if there's an absolute edition, I'll buy it because I'm sick like that. But
yeah,
I mean, it's amazing,
nice,
and the art blown up would be phenomenal. And
who
was the colorist on that?
Jimmy Grant.
Awesome job.
Long Halloween was 13 issues, 14,
13 issues, and that made a great absolute. But their pricing on that's pissing me off.
Well, wasn't Ronin $100?
Ronin was $100, and I looked at my absolute authority
volume 2,
and it was $50, same size.
I don't think Ronin deserves an absolute edition anyway. It's just Frank Miller.
I loved Ronin.
I like it.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's like
Samurai Jack.
What did you read, young man?
For us.
Let me see here.
His stack.
You're the only one with an actual stack. Our stacks are all hypothetical.
Decisions,
I have a box
decisions,
of donuts
decisions.
Here.
Give me a donut. Give me that that cream-filled pus pocket.
A bitch.
All right, this is hard. I gotta narrow it down.
My wife called.
Can I lead in with that a real quick honorable mention?
Honorably.
I've been reading Batman Confidential since Nicieza and Kevin Maguire were doing it on that.
Good enough reason, right there.
The Cat and the Bat,
yeah.
Which was a great, I think, 5-issue series, and they changed creative teams, and it is now Andrew Kreisberg and Scott McDaniel on art. So it's a new creative team, new story arc, and this is about Batman's the first time that he caught the Joker and turned him into the Gotham police. And it started as a, you know,
it's regret.
Honestly, I didn't have a whole lot of expectations on this because I love the last arc so much. Started reading it and really liked how the Joker was depicted. It's almost in a Deadpool way of just his absolute insanity and his ability to crack jokes and totally just freeze people with his absurdity and madness as he's in the jail. And the story actually turns extremely dark. So if you're looking for a really good one issue that illustrates how maniacally evil and insane the Joker is, pick up the last issue of Batman Confidential.
So it's a one-shot?
I think it's going to be a larger story. This issue, it certainly reads as a self-contained, and I think
it even says new story begins here.
It does go into a continued issue after this. Okay. This could easily be a one-shot. It's the story, and you really kind of have to read it, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but this story definitely wraps up on the last page, but then I think it kind of continues the Joker's story in jail. And I think the whole point of the book is going to be how Gotham, early Gotham, which all the confidential stories are about early times in these heroes' careers, that when Joker was first caught, I don't know if there was an Arkham Asylum mm-hmm. at that point, but the Gotham Police Department was not able to deal with the Joker. This is not the kind of criminal that they're designed to deal with. Kind of like in the movie that, you know, the Dark Knight. Once they got a hold of him, they weren't able to.
Yeah.
He was just too smart and too insane for them to know how
ahead.
To deal with. Yeah, and he plays on people's emotions. So Batman Confidential is actually really, really good. So if you've been reading it, go ahead and continue. But my real top of the stack this week is Stephen King's The Stand, Captain Trips, number 2 of 5. And fans of The Stand, whether it be the novel or the miniseries or whatever, this is awesome. You know the story. You know how it's unfolding, and it's still entertaining. Each page is
now,
still...
Now, is this an adaptation of The Stand, or is this... I thought it was like a prequel.
No, this is The Stand.
Why are they calling it Captain Trips?
Because that's the first story. It's the spread of the disease, which was called Captain Trips.
Yeah. The first chapter or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is basically this miniseries. And
it's just the first part of The Stand.
It's going to be...
it is enormous.
It's going to be 30 issues, so I'm assuming gigantic. It's, what's that, five-issue miniseries?
Five miniseries.
And, Mike Perkins
said he was... Or six-issue miniseries?
This is five
okay,
issues, so,
six,
so be six, five-issue miniseries. It is Mike Perkins is on art, and it is absolutely gorgeous. And the script is Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa.
He's from that dude.
Yeah.
Marvel Knights 4 and stuff like that.
Mike Perkins needs to call me.
Oh.
He was great.
Gonna get that Invader story.
I have a great Captain America Invader story that we need to do.
This is incredibly well scripted. It's following the story, but the dialogue super crisp. The narration is spot on. So yeah, the scripting and storytelling is very good. But Mike Perkins is tearing the shit out of this book. It is so. I loved his stuff on Captain America, but this is so awesome. It's just an absolutely gorgeous book. His ability to capture the quiet moments of these characters in the beginnings of the spreading of the plague, and also just the grotesque spread of the plague and what it does to people. He captures both of those moments so well. In between the Dark Tower.
You want to make love to this
book. I want to make love to this book. It is so good.
All right.
So.
Just say that from now on.
Yes.
It's so good, I want to fuck it.
Yes. In between the Dark Tower stuff and The Stand, it's like an entire new franchise for Marvel, and the talent that they've put on it and the just attention to detail that they're putting into these.
I love the fact
Stephen King fans should be very happy.
When you walk in the bookstores now, the big chains, you have that book mm-hmm. or the hardcovers of the first Stand, or the...
right next to the Anita Blake.
right next to Stephen King's books.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, or just the
oh,
horror section.
That's
that
how it should
I mean,
work.
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they do more of that. And I know Scotty's hoping they do that with Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz, absolutely.
when that comes out. And,
but,
hey, if Stephen King wrote Wizard of Oz, maybe, man.
Yeah, no shit.
But, speaking of Stephen King, the Lock and Key hardcover came out a couple weeks ago.
I'm buying it today, actually.
It's Joe Hill, which is Stephen King's son, but definitely stands on his own merits as a writer. So if you have...
You started reading one of his books, right?
I'm reading Heart-Shaped Box right now.
Good stuff.
I
I like it. It's
is that a Nirvana based? Is that about Nirvana?
Well, it's about a rock and roll kind of an aging rock.
Wasn't that a Nirvana album or
yeah.
song?
Yeah.
Song.
Yeah, but it is about an aging rock and roll star who's kind of been an asshole his entire life, and the chickens are coming home to roost.
Oh, sounds interesting.
Yeah. So one of spoilers on Heart Shaped Box, just the plot of it, basic setup is that one of the women that he shacked up with, and the line of disposable women that he's gone through, kind of ditched her. She went back home, committed suicide, and her mother put a curse on him.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's very it's cool.
My sister believes she cursed the Cubs.
Really?
Mark Pryor specifically.
Are there?
Want to hear the story?
Chicken bones?
No. It was.
Your sister's a goat.
My sister is not a goat, but she went to Florida to see the Cubs play a couple of years back when Pryor was a stud. I don't remember. I don't know. I don't know all the details.
Glory days.
Yeah. But they go down there to see a game, and they're in the stands, and my niece, who's a big Cub fan, she's a Cub fan, she's in the stands, and this was before the game, and they're doing the warm-ups and everything, and Mark Pryor comes over, and he throws a baseball up in the stand, and she catches it. Great. So then she's yelling, hoping he would sign it. He wouldn't sign it, whatever. So after the game...
I curse you, Pryor!
No, they wait outside. They wait outside, and Pryor comes out, and all the, you know, everybody's coming out and going in the bus or whatever, but they're all stopping and signing. And so she's sitting there waiting for like an hour and a half for them to come out to maybe get her baseball signed. And he walks straight past everybody, goes on the bus and sits down and doesn't sign one autograph. And they're yelling at him, and my sister's like, F you, I curse you. He has not pitched a game since that day.
Nice.
This is just like all say, this does
but has to be
I just want
to
say, well, science. No, it's obviously, yes, it's
but
science.
It further validates my theory that sports and religion are way too close and they need to stop. They're both dangerous, so you guys, I mean, this is...
But the whole Cubs thing, I hear Cubs jokes on NPR.
Oh, it's Saturday Night Live. Yeah, they're getting torn apart. Yeah,
oh, the Daily Show.
It's funny, though.
It is funny, especially as a Sox fan. It's hilarious to me, but I actually almost feel bad for him at some point. It's like, wow, you're getting shit on by Saturday Night Live.
It kind of sucks.
But
did you see the political special last night?
Thursday Night Live? I did not. I heard about it.
It was quick. It was like a half hour.
It was just a half hour. Half of it. I heard Bill Murray was on it.
That was his question to the political candidates is what they're going to do to help ensure that the Cubs eventually win a World Series. And and they're like, yeah.
Sorry. See, that just scares me because that further validates my claim that
politics,
people care.
Religion, and sports.
Yeah, well, politics you should be care about. You shouldn't care about religion or sports. That's my problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know.
You should care about politics. Most people care more about religion and sports. It just scares me, dude. So anyway, that's a different argument. But you know,
you care about all, can't you?
I think comics. Let's just care about comics.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. You wanna wrap this one up?
Is that it? We're done? That's an hour? We're at an hour?
We're at an hour.
I was going to ask Hank a question before we go, though. Okay. Just out of personal... No,
I'm not taking questions.
I'm just wondering, because you're in high school, I was just wondering, are you familiar with the Stephanie Meyer set of books, Twilight?
I am too familiar with those books.
Have you read those books?
No. I know.
But you know a bunch of...
He doesn't have a vagina. I'm the loser who doesn't read that book.
But you know, do you know a lot of people that read it?
It's so cool to read those books.
Harry Potter is so lame. Are guys reading it?
Only if their boyfriends are reading it.
Boyfriends
are reading it.
Oh my God.
I just want to.
No single guy. If
anybody out there has read these books.
Trying to brag.
Could you please send me an email explaining what it is about these books that you enjoy so much? I'm not condemning you. I'm not judging you.
Dicks.
I'm interesting. I read about half of the first one, and that's about as far as I can make it. But I'm not saying that it's just not for me. I'm 38 years old, and it's not written
Nothing's
for me.
You. You're cynical.
Well,
you hate everything.
No, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I do. I just am interested to find out what people that love
because there's people
like there's people are crazy about
yeah.
it.
Well, that was the busiest thing at San Diego Comic Con was that panel the Twilight panel. It was.
I mean, I think I got a handle on it.
It was busier than any other panel at that show.
I feel so.
But I just would be interested to know anybody that's read it.
But it's like
more specifically, not like
it's not like it's new. It's like vampire romance thing.
But
it's the main display in the library. That's what's getting people into the library. And
hey man, a kid's
issue. You see the movie.
Oh no! I'm not judging anyone for enjoying it.
You really want
to
know?
I really would like to know.
And when you
what
get it, pass
is.
It on to me. Because I
yeah,
I like vampires and shit. But that just no offense, that shit looked wussy. You know what I mean? But I'm not, whatever, that's okay.
You can my look judgment of the book itself, the writing itself, that's one thing. I mean, I think it's not particularly well written in my opinion. It's overwritten, and it's not a terribly exciting book for me. But like I said, it's not written for me, so that's fine. I just would like to know what people. I mean, people are nuts about, like, crazy. My niece.
Yeah.
I have a niece that I asked about, and she couldn't even explain it to me what she liked about it. So that's why I'm wondering.
And the movie's
like,
coming out.
Yeah, there's movies coming out. It's huge. Huge. I just want to know. Yeah, that's all.
So
send me an email.
Sal@aroundcomics.com.
Email me your love of the Twilight series books and get in as much detail as you want.
And speaking of emails, I'm going to encourage people to start emailing the show with questions again. We haven't had listener questions in a while.
I had a couple. I thought I sent them. Maybe
email me.
Maybe I need to check.
Email Hank.
Sal started a thread on the forum this week that was
everything you wanted to know about comics we were afraid to ask.
That was you?
And your question was,
why does Namor yell Imperius Rex when he is going into battle? What does it mean and why does he say it? I have no idea. But I was always sort of embarrassed to ask because it's something I should know, but it appears no one knows. And it doesn't.
God, I don't know that either.
I don't think anyone knows. I don't think there is.
I'm like a Marvel dork and I don't know.
Why does he yell it? It doesn't even
mean
anything.
It's funny.
It is kind of funny.
It's like me running to a battle going, Homo Superior!
What is even his species?
Imperius Rex? Maybe that's what it is. That's his species.
But I don't know for sure.
But someone said on the website that Imperius isn't a word.
It's a Stanism. But,
yeah, it's a Stanism.
But he didn't make him up, though. He didn't make Namor up.
But I think he started the whole Imperius Rex thing, probably.
I don't know.
If you run into a fight and yell Homo Superior, that's cool, too.
I will.
Homo Superior, or Homo Erotica.
Sapien. Jesus, I'm gonna run into battle yelling Homo Erotica.
Homo Sapien. If you're an X-Men, yell Homo Superior. If you're a normal Sal, yell Homo Sapien.
But when I'm in my X costume,
that's not very special, though.
Homo Sapien.
If you're fighting a wolf. Canis Lupus! The wolf yells and baby.
The wolf is not going to give a shit what you yell.
Yeah. Bite your ass.
All right, but anyway, email. Go ahead and email me, Chris@aroundcomics.com or Sal@aroundcomics.com.
Don't email me.
Email
info@aroundcomics.com.
There you go.
It'll get to both of us.
info@aroundcomics.com. Send us your questions. Give us some conversation starters. We always like that stuff.
Because we're running out of
yell Canis Lupus.
We're running out of shit to talk about. Check out Tom versus the Flash. I'm sure that will come out with a little bit more frequency after the extension passes.
Flighty.
I'm on 11 o'clock comics
you
with
can't even do this podcast
with,
on a regular
with
basis.
Vince Lee and David Price and Wood. Wood, I owe you an apology on the Deadpool stuff.
How's Wood feeling in this financial crisis? Is he doing okay?
He's actually.
Last time I talked to him, he was a little on edge.
Little edgy, but I think he's holding it together.
That's good.
So he still likes talking comics on Wednesday night. So,
at one point, I had to block him from my Twitter account because I couldn't stand the financial talk any longer. And then I had to block Augie DeBleek.
What was
his love of John McCain? Which
what was Tom's really fun Twitter this week?
Oh God, I don't know. Tom's the only person on Twitter that I get the forwards to my phone.
Yeah,
because he'll just say shit that kills me.
He actually heard someone crying in the bathroom.
Yeah, he heard somebody crying in the bathroom at work, and I can't remember what he said.
Those are doubt tears. Those are doubt.
My
doubt tears.
My friend.
Oh, Dow Tears.
So that's why I keep
that's
Tom
the name
on,
of my emo band
Instant
too, by the way.
Dow Tears.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And Dow is
the Dow Jones Industrial.
God damn it, Hank.
All right. I'm actually scaling back my comic shots. I'm actually doing that twice a month now, so every other week. I'm starting to get a little burnout. So every other week at iFanboy comic shots, and it's a
I need an article to write or something.
You should write it. You would be
for somebody.
You're better writer than me.
I don't know about that, but
I tie booze.
You can write
an
editorial for Hank Slash something.
Yeah? Could I?
If I can.
Oh, that'd be kind of sweet.
Do it.
Actually, all
there
right.
you go.
I'm going to write something for Hank Slash.
About Casey.
Casey Hackenstein.
I was going to bring my my omnibus, my Hack Slash.
Yeah, whatever.
No, I bought it from you at Wizard World.
That's just shit, yeah.
Bastard. Douche.
All right. I would like to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Mark for hosting us, as always, here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. Hank?
Tim.
Thanks for
anytime.
You. Everyone. Next time we see you, will be at Windy City Comic Con. Chicago's only comic book convention.
Boo fucking yeah.
Best, yeah. best volunteers in Chicago.
Best volunteers.
I hear they're Iraqi. I'm not going.
Terrorists. Fucking terrorists.
Really?
Really? We're going there?
If
we're
Hank,
going there, Tim?
If Hank volunteers, the terrorists win.
Sarah Palin, in one of her rally speeches today, says that Around Comics pals around with terrorists. Now we know what she was saying. All right. Okay, everyone. Have a great rest of your week and weekend.
Hussein.
We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
And Around Comics.
Someone
really bad.
Oh, the smoke.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, across the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
He'll reach deep into the hole, heal your shrinking soul, but there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing land, but hidden in his coat is a red right hand. Respect, you feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, 'cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands. Stacks of green paper in his red right hand.
TV screen. Hey, buddy, I'm warning you to turn it off. He's a ghost, he's a god, he's a man, he's a guru. You're one microscopic cog in his catastrophic plan, designed and directed by his red